Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, you are listening to The Southern Fork, a podcast that hosts kitchen chats with some of the most interesting people in the culinary South. I'm your host, Stephanie Burt, and I'm always hungry to learn more. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is supported by Edmunds Oast, Edmunds Oast Brewing Company, and Edmunds Oast Exchange. Okay, it's probably not much of a secret that EO, that's what the locals call it, so feel free to adopt, is one of my favorite restaurants in Charleston because they consistently excel at food, cocktails, beer, service, and atmosphere. But if I thought it was a go-to before, well, that was just the beginning. First, they're expanding and opening a brewery any moment now. Edmunds Oast Brewing Company, located in the new Pacific Box and Crate Complex north of the city, will soon start production at its 20,000 square foot brewery. And then next to the restaurant, Edmunds Oast Exchange is coming, a reborn Charleston beer exchange that will be a retail destination for beer lovers, no doubt. And finally, back at the restaurant, one of my favorite chefs in town, Bob Cook, remember episode 8? Is the new executive chef. What I'm trying to say is, if I'm not at my desk, it's a good bet you'll find me at Edmunds Oast even more than ever. For more information about EO and any of its growing fine family of establishments, visit edmundsoast.com. It's time we all admit something to each other. Based on the number of people I see in the drive-thru line every day at my neighborhood coffee chain, you know, the one with the green logo, well, some of us simply must be fans. I'll go first. I used to pop in more than I'd like to admit this time of year for an iced chai tea latte. It was an accessible summer pick-me-up, sweet and spicy. But then I met Sarah Scarborough. If you've had an independent coffeehouse chai tea latte in Nashville, Tennessee, chances are you've enjoyed her fire pot chai. She started making it 17 years ago, and it's led her on a journey where, as she tells it, tea leads the way. Y'all, it's hot out there right now, and with traffic and the news, and wanting to be on vacation instead of at a desk, we could all use a serene tea break. Sarah of Firepot Nomadic Teas talks about the power of serendipity, the anchor of a good ritual that gives pause to mind and body, and all kinds of specifics about tea itself. In the hottest cultures in the world, a cup of tea can cool you down. So try a sip with us.
Welcome to the Southern Fork, Sarah.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yes. And Sarah has a tea voice. It's so kind and gentle. So I'm going to do my best to make her speak up or get angry. One or the other.
I'll speak up.
But we are sitting right now in one of my favorite places to record, which is a hotel room that I basically invite myself into. So Sarah, you're visiting right now from Nashville, and you're in Charleston, and you're dying for a Bellini. Why is that?
I know that I'm dying. The gin and tonic sounds a lot better, actually. I just think you have to have Bellinis when you're in Charleston. Isn't that the thing? Isn't that the drink you're supposed to have?
Well, maybe bottomless mimosas on
maybe
Sunday.
Maybe I just thought Funday. I could get away with a nice glass of champagne on a Tuesday morning.
Maybe that's it. But she spent the last 5 minutes or so trying to convince me that maybe I could have one too on Tuesday morning. But for the most part, Sarah, usually you talk about tea, which is what I want to talk about today. So you have this very global brand and company in Nashville, Tennessee.
I know, right?
And everybody that listens to the Southern Fork knows that I'm a huge fan of Nashville, and it's a lot more than Broadway. But right. How do you deal with that juxtaposition of country music fans and this global team?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting thing because I was from Nashville and then went to college on the East Coast and ended up getting the travel bug and started a tea company about 17 years ago. And then I was selling tea in New Zealand and Australia and traveling around Asia and lived in Alaska for a while and just sort of accidentally came back to Nashville to start a different tea company about 10 years ago. And I mean, I can't tell you why it is that I ended up there to do the tea business. It just...
It was home?
Yeah, it was home. You know, life took me back there, and that was 10 years ago. And at the time, Nashville was really just turning into what it is now. I mean, there was, you know, Whole Foods was just being built.
Right.
And, the organic farms were just being established, mm-hmm. and the cool indie designers were just getting started and mm-hmm. things like that. So at the time that we started that tea company, it was not anything close to what it is now. And a little bit harder to be selling fair trade, organic, beautiful, crazy tea blends.
Do you blend your teas yourself?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
We actually have our own warehouse and we have our own bottling facility. So we make our chai from scratch. We bring in the spices. We grind them fresh. We brew them up in a great big kettle and bottle it ourselves.
And you don't cover it with nasty milk products, right? Like chai tea lattes?
I mean, you can make chai tea lattes, but what I guess what's different about our chai is that it's freshly ground, it's all organic, it's fair trade. We use less sugar and we use a raw organic sugar, so it's not like this sticky sweet chai syrup that you see, mm-hmm. you know, in the gas stations and things
right.
like that. It's authentic. It's a traditional mm-hmm. chai. I've been making it 17 years.
Wow.
So it's been a long journey with the tea. I always say that when I started it 17 years ago, it felt like it found me. I didn't really go mm-hmm. out seeking tea more than it found me, and I was just in the passenger seat. And I've
please
been
explain
following
that.
On this journey.
How does that feel? Also, like, how did it find you? Because who starts a tea company besides you, right?
No, it's awesome. I mean, it really has been this amazing thread through my life because I'd been into organic agriculture my whole 20s and loved travel, you know, grew up between Scandinavia and the U.S., had a stint in Panama with my family, but loved travel, loved organic agriculture, ended up working at a Tibetan tea house in Montana and came up with this chai recipe, and people just loved it so much. And literally it is this recipe that has fueled the last 17 years of my life in tea. It's just, I've just followed it, you know, it's been like a miraculous journey, to be honest, because it came to me. The fire pot chai started 17 years ago, turned into a business. And then after some time, I moved to Alaska and kept running it there just because life took me to Alaska with an ex-boyfriend, actually. And then I got a call from some businessmen in New Zealand when I was living off the grid, like in a wall tent in Alaska.
So how did they call? They said, can you go get her? Like at the gas
call.
Station?
They emailed.
They emailed.
And
okay.
And then we set up a phone call. And I was working at the Alaska Mountaineering School. And I had to drive down to the Mountaineering School to have a phone call. And yeah, it's funny. It's before I had a cell phone. So then they invited me to New Zealand. And I went, like, I think they had a plane ticket in my inbox the next day. I was like, sure, I'll go spend 3 weeks in New Zealand. And then long story short, I ended up moving down there. And we started a bigger tea company called Scarborough Fair that was fair trade tea, coffee, and chocolate. And then that kind of fell off the tracks, immigration issues, et cetera. And I was moving somewhere and I didn't know where. And then an old girlfriend from high school called, or I ran into her at Bread and Company in Nashville, and she was like, I love what you're doing, let's start a tea company. And I was like, no way, I don't want to start a tea company. I'm gonna go do agriculture again and travel. And anyway, another long story short, we ended up back in Nashville starting a tea company. So things like that keep happening to me,
right?
Where
tea won't let you go,
falls in my lap,
right?
And then we sold Partners Tea Company to the Republic of Tea in 2011. I went to work for them as a tea buyer for a couple years. And then when I got pregnant, I couldn't.
And that's a huge company. Republic of Tea makes beautiful teas. And really, it's a wonderful grocery store tea to, or specialty store tea to get familiar with when you're getting into the world of
tea. Well, they were one of the original specialty tea companies. Mm-hmm. So it was an amazing opportunity to travel and to meet producers all over the world and to do something, you know, unique for them. But then when I got pregnant, I couldn't travel like that anymore. So for the first time in my life, 5 years ago, I was, you know, I had my 4-month-old and I was like, oh my God, I don't have a job. And, you know, what am I going to do? And I thought, this is the time to bring Fire Pot Chai back to life. I've been meaning to do it for 15 years. And so I rebranded it, started bottling it, got local distribution, which turned into regional distribution. And it was easy because the chai is just so good. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going to take on partners. I'm not taking on investors. This is just going to be my thing. So then when my partners approached me.
Did you? Wait. She's a very fast talker. So I want to make sure you heard that. She does these things like, no. And then there's this easing that happens, right? Time and space. So you were saying, you were saying, no, I don't want to do tea again. I'm going to go back into organic agriculture. And then you took a breath and then you said, then we started the tea company.
I think I'm just a pushover. I'm very easily convinced of things.
We're going to have lots of conversations when I get off the this podcast. But you have this, you said no, and then you reconsider. Mm-hmm. So, and then because it's still knocking at your door, right?
I mean, this is what I'm saying, like tea, and we can talk about this thing more because this is the most exciting part about tea is that it really is, I think, such a magical kind of spiritual plant. And the way that we consume it here is sweet tea. And, you know, in the United States since 1904, World Fair in St. Louis, we've been drinking iced tea in tea bags. So that was when we discovered both of those products, both iced tea and tea bags, was at the World Fair in St. Louis. And since then, we've been drinking cheap, sweet tea. Like we haven't had a specialty tea culture really in this country. Mm-hmm. We don't have a tea ritual that's our own. We don't have a tea tradition really that's our own. We don't do the Japanese tea ceremony or the British afternoon tea or the Gong Fu Cha in China or any of that. So it's really just now that people are starting to come to tea and recognize that this is the world's number one most consumed beverage after water in the whole world. And that it has formed cultures. It has, there are places in China where they revere tea as a god. There are ceremonies and rituals and, you know, it's just such a powerful plant. And I think.
Think that it hasn't caught on until now? Do you think it's because of the nature of American culture and the fast pace? Or do you think it's just been lack of availability? Just in your opinion, obviously.
I mean, I think it has caught on in tea bags and sweet tea. I mean, definitely every house has tea, every restaurant has tea, every hotel has tea. We have tea. We just haven't developed a ritual around it. Part of that is because when tea came here with the Brits, the American Revolution was happening, and we, you know, famously threw all the tea overboard during the Boston Tea Party and the start of the American Revolution. And so we were rejecting anything very British like afternoon tea and tea time. We didn't want their culture. We didn't want their taxes. We didn't want their rule. We didn't want any of that. We wanted to be our own independent country. So that's, I think, why British tea didn't catch on. And then we didn't develop our own tea culture because we don't grow tea here. We in China, they've been
except
growing for 5,000 years.
In Charleston.
Well, yeah. But, you know, that not really.
It's a very small operation.
Right. And it's not like coffee where you can just pop down to Guatemala or Honduras. I mean, you have to get on a plane for a day to get to where they're really doing tea. So I think that's a big part of it, too, is just the world is getting smaller every day and people are interested more in India and China and Sri Lanka and some of these places where they have tea rituals and customs. We're just not that close to it.
When you're, number one, Nashville is a great place to fly in and out of. Mm. It's a great airport.
It is.
It's a nice mid-size airport to do this kind of travel.
Right.
But I think when people hear you say that, oh my gosh, it takes a day, and you did travel like that forever. Right. I just have to ask you an aside. How did you recover? What was your
travel?
Yeah, what was your jet lag recovery? Oh, do you remember?
Well, yeah. I mean, I still do it now, so I can tell you what it's like now with two little babies at home and a husband and a life and a house and a business versus what it used to be like when I was in my 20s and 30s without any of that. I really do think you acclimate to a degree. So I think when I was younger and doing it, I really just didn't feel it that much. Mm-hmm. I just had such gusto to like travel and put my backpack on and, you know, go down the unbeaten path and get to know the tea growers and just to soak it all up. So I think my energy just fueled me and I really was into just the experience of it all. So I don't think mm-hmm. I felt the jet lag or mm-hmm. the impact of it too much. And even when I was traveling for Republic of Tea, like some of my colleagues would come out from San Francisco to Central Time Zone and they'd be going, oh, we're so jet lagged. I mean, it's 4 a.m. in California and it's 6 here. And I would laugh and be like, oh, I just got back from India and it's midnight there and it's noon here. So I think you acclimate. Now, you know, now I've just had two babies. And so now my time's whatever. I don't sleep that much anymore. So now I've acclimated as a mom. Yeah, I think it does take a personality, though, that just can roll with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you're the type of person that needs to get your 8 hours and you have to have that rhythm and that structure of your day, it blows that apart. Mm-hmm. So it,
but there's always a cup of tea to kind of set you right.
There is. So it helps.
Right. So let's talk about your personal tea ritual. Do you have one?
Oh, I do. It changes depending mm-hmm. on where I am. You know, I can be a real tea snob and I can also just be happy with whatever I find down in the lobby. I wake up every morning and I make a pot of something. My favorite is Darjeeling First Flush. So that's what I love. I'm actually out of 2016's harvest and they're having political issues there right now. I don't have any fresh tea from there right now, but my mornings are that usually one of my boys will wake me up early. I usually get drug out of bed. It's a mess of getting everybody fed and dressed and out the door and all of that. So for me, my pot of tea is like my touch point. Like as soon as I make my pot of tea, whether or not I've actually had a sip of it or drunk it, I know it's there. It's sort of like my savior.
And do you make it before all of that chaos happens?
If I get up first, I do. Mm-hmm. It's usually the first thing I try to do. It usually takes me about 30 minutes to like complete the process because I'm running after a boy or I'm, you know, having to feed the dog or let the cat out or something. But yeah, it's usually the first thing on my mind. And I'll make a pot and I guess that's my ritual. It's not much of a ritual, but it does feel like a touch point. It does feel like something that's mine mm-hmm. and it does feel like a moment of peace and something mm-hmm. that I guess it's like the consistency of it maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, just lovely to have a cup of tea. And then I usually have tea in the afternoon. It just depends. I mean, yesterday I had a really nice tray of tea with my friends that were in town and we sat and had a nice conversation. And I love the way that you can have tea with friends and come together over it, have a conversation. It gives you a natural break. Plus it's beautiful. Teapots are beautiful. Teacups mm-hmm. are beautiful. And whether you're drinking, you know, china at a hotel in London or you're drinking out of a handmade mug in Charleston, mm-hmm. it's something beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just read a blog that you contributed to from Tales of the Cocktail just a bit. Yeah. And we were talking about cocktail use and tea. And I know that the Charleston punches are traditional tea punches because of the British influence here in the antebellum times with cocktails. But before we get into... all these ideas about tea, I noticed in that I was using tea in the wrong way, the term tea, because I drink tea a lot, mm-hmm. but I also drink a lot of herbal teas, and I was calling them teas, but you differentiate that.
Right, so tea, in the way that all wine comes from the grape, all tea comes from the tea plant, which is Camellia sinensis. So they're, depending on how the tea leaf is processed, you get white tea or black tea or oolong or green or
pu'er. But it's all the same plant.
Yellow, but it all comes from the Camellia sinensis plant. So when we say I had a cup of rooibos tea or I had a cup of peppermint tea or chamomile tea, what we mean is I had a cup of infused peppermint or infused chamomile or infused rooibos. But because we're infusing these herbs in the same way that you would infuse tea leaves, we've come to call them tea, but they're not tea. The French call it tisane. Botanical infusion, I like, you know, herbal infusion, herbal tea. So yeah, that's a whole different world.
So when you do the blending of your teas, I want to kind of get into like a little more of an intense discussion about tea. I think my initial thought is that you're adding some of those herbs into a blend, but I'm going to guess that that's incorrect.
There's a number of different ways to flavor a blend. So one of them is by actually putting oil or some sort of flavor additive to the tea. So that's Earl Grey. So Earl Grey tea is typically a bright, brisk Ceylon tea that has essential oil of bergamot put onto it. So like our tea is, we get a really nice cold pressed bergamot oil. We literally toss it into the tea leaves so that the tea leaves take on the bergamot essence. That's one way of flavoring it. Another way is to infuse the leaf. So this is jasmine tea, for example. Like in China, they make a green tea in the spring. And when the jasmine flowers are blooming in the summer, they bring the green tea that they just made out of storage. At nighttime, when the sun's gone down, they lay out all the green tea. They bring in the fresh jasmine blossoms and then lay them on top of the green tea. And then in the heat and kind of dampness of the night, the tea takes on the essence of the jasmine. And then they'll remove one layer of jasmine flowers and bring in another one. Sometimes do that up to 10 times in a night.
So that is an amazing process. I never knew that. I love jasmine tea.
It's beautiful and it's really labor intensive. And that's why you get that beautiful, organic, rich jasmine taste rather than if you just put jasmine oil on it, it wouldn't taste the same. So that's another way to flavor your tea. A third way to flavor your tea is by actually adding spices or herbs or botanicals into the tea. So this is chai. Like chai, we grind all these fresh spices. We add them to our black tea. So when we're blending, you know, we have a green tea blend that's a jasmine green tea, and then we're adding peppermint into it and blending it together. Again, in the case of our Italian gray, we're putting the oil onto the leaves. With the chai, we're blending them together. And then sometimes we have just pure botanical infusions, which don't have any true tea in them. So that would be like our hibiscus elixir, which is a blend of hibiscus and apple pieces and elderberries and ginger and licorice and things like that.
So, are you still doing those blends? Like you're still the one blending? No?
I'm not blending them anymore.
Okay.
No. We have a team of people in the warehouse that blend them.
Do you go in and sometimes like an executive chef would and taste and check and inspect?
I do. It's really important because, you know, after doing this 17 years, sometimes you'll get a bad batch of cardamom. And if the people that are blending don't know it's a bad batch, it's going to ruin the whole batch. Ginger is really finicky. Yeah, I do.
So the fire pot chai is available in bottle.
Steep the spices for a really long time, add the tea. We add vanilla, raw organic sugar, and then we bottle it. So that is for chai lattes. That's what people do half-half with milk. And we sell that in half-gallon jugs and distribute it to most coffee shops in Nashville. We have a lot of accounts in Hawaii.
Why Hawaii?
Missouri. Because my partners work out there.
See? That's what it is. It's practicality. You know, she didn't say, you know, I might not use that New Zealand ticket. You just said,
oh, you go.
Oh, yeah, yes, I'm going. And then you're like, oh, right, you live in Hawaii, partner. So do you want or work out there? So bring fire pot with you.
And you know what's funny? So getting back to the thing that tea sort of took me, rather than me going after it the other way around, I always had this sense that fire pot belonged in Hawaii. I just felt like, you know, fire pot with all the hot pots and hot springs. And the branding feels very feminine and beautiful the way that Hawaii does. And so it was really interesting when my new partners had worked out there and then we started training and distributing in Hawaii because I thought, well, this was just obviously going to happen in time. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey. I mean, I don't know what's next, but it's been.
So what about if someone doesn't have experience? I think a lot of Southerners just know it as sweet tea, and that's fine. We're not saying today, Sarah and I aren't chatting about giving that up. We're saying expanding the palate. And there are so many flavors and moods you can get from a warm cup of tea that you can't get from an iced tea, I mean, or a coffee.
Right.
And so when somebody is interested in getting into tea or exploring the world,
right.
you're a Sherpa for that. You're a guide into that.
Yeah.
How do you tell, what would you say to someone that sits down in Nashville and says, I'm interested, but I don't know anything about this. What do you suggest? How do you suggest I start?
Yeah, and that happens all the time. So I think it's like anything in life. You have to do what you love. You have to follow your bliss. And I think that with tea, it's the same way. Like, some people love matcha lattes. I don't really care for them.
I don't.
Personally,
they're not my thing for some
reason.
But
I do love the matcha margaritas that I make. So I love chai. I love a, you know, I love a black tea or a Darjeeling tea, a light liquoring black tea. Some people really love green tea, Japanese green tea. I think you have to just drink what you love and find what you love. And I think that's just a process of ordering tea, going to your coffee shop and going, I think I'll try the tea today. And
find a flavor that you're familiar with and start there. Like if you know, like, I like cinnamon, I like cardamom, maybe I would enjoy chai.
Yeah, or just kind of being reckless and ordering the Japanese green tea that you don't know if you like or not. You've never heard of it before, but why not?
It's a cup of tea.
It might be a $3 cup of tea. It's a pretty great way to explore the world. But that is another thing about tea. It's that whereas coffee gives you one kind of buzz, each kind of tea gives you a different kind of health effect or buzz. One thing I think is really interesting about tea that a lot of people don't know is that green tea, particularly all tea, but particularly a fresh green tea, like a Japanese green tea, it has a compound called L-theanine. It's an amino acid that people take in pill form to sleep and to focus and to meditate. And so that's why the Buddhist monks took it around the world. And that's why tea went around Asia. That's how it traveled around Asia. And so even now, if I want that calm, alert mental state, you can drink green tea and it gives you that L-theanine. So if you're having sleep issues, for example, it would seem counterintuitive to have a cup of green tea, but it actually relaxes your mind and it increases alpha waves. So it's, again, just fascinating, powerful.
Yes.
And the caffeine is slow release in tea because of the catechins, the antioxidants again. So whereas coffee releases in your body in a matter of a few hours, tea will take up to 10. So I think that's also really interesting because you can have a cup of tea now and it sets you up for this sort of Zen mind lifestyle almost, like almost throughout the whole day.
I am so going to go get tea on my way home because I need calm focus for sure. But we could sit and talk about this, but the best way to really understand what Sarah's going for here really is to have a cup of tea. So if people want to learn more about Sarah and her beautiful world of tea, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. We're going to have an image of her. If you like what you hear, please leave a review on your favorite podcast app. And in general, just do your best to explore the world. Like Sarah said, what better way to explore the world through a cup of tea or any of your food. Food, and as long as it's safe, is not going to kill you. You might not like it, but why not try it?
Right.
Thanks again for coming.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?